You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome in everybody to another episode of the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. The show is on Twitter at Locked On Vikings, and today is Twitter Tuesday. So if you sent me a question at one of those two places, I got it written down here. I'm going to try to answer as many as I can on this show. Most of this stuff, a lot of this stuff is draft. A lot of this is like kind of player philosophy stuff. So this should be a really good time. So we are going to kick it off with a question from Substance D, who says, dash my dreams about a Watson trade, please and thank you. Okay, I guess I'll be happy to oblige that. For one, a Watson trade would be a good idea for the Vikings to go and try and call around for. They should definitely pick up the phone, right? They probably always should. And there's no really any way to check on if they did or not. But the thing is, they are pretty outmatched here. They brought a roll of quarters to an art auction. And they're not going to be able to compete in that market. So here's the thing. The Texans can't really take on any extra veteran contracts, and most of the Vikings' valuable assets are in the form of players on big contracts, guys like Danielle Hunter, guys like Adam Thielen. They don't have a ton of draft capital. They've got a lot of mid-round picks, a really big glut of mid-round picks, actually. But that pales in comparison to teams like the Jets, who have some extra draft capital. They have two first-round picks. They have, of course, you know, the second overall pick. Miami has a young quarterback, and that's what the Texans would want to do with that pick. They could package pick number three and Tua Tagovailoa, and the Texans probably start to think about that trade. And the Vikings can't really compete with that. Yeah, they can put Kirk Cousins in a deal, and a Kirk Cousins for Deshaun Watson trade does work out from a money perspective, but I don't think they can throw in the draft capital kicker that would outdo a deal for Tua Tagovailoa, the third overall pick, and extra draft capital and stuff. They just, yeah, they got a roll of nickels in an art auction. Doug Nasby says it sounds like Watt is leaving. Would he help the Vikings in a 4-3 scheme? And if so, what would be needed to acquire Watson and Watt? Yeah, so if you're unfamiliar with what's going on in Houston, basically that organization is a total dumpster fire and all of their hot veterans want out, right? So J.J. Watt is one of those veterans. And if the Vikings were to try to acquire him, I think the biggest obstacle is probably salary cap. So in this world, the Vikings would have to take on the entirety of the $17.5 million price tag in 2021 that J.J. Watt comes with. That would be the last year of his deal. You'd probably have to do some sort of extension nonsense with, you know, signing bonus and stuff to get that cap hit down. It would almost bring the Texans back to even against a $175 million cap, because we don't know what it's going to be. There's actually some questions about that later. But the contract would be, I think, the most difficult thing to figure out in terms of what it would actually cost. Listen, J.J. Watt has had health issues. He's on the wrong side of 30. I don't think scheme really matters one way or another here. He was like a 4-3 edge rusher, hand in the dirt type guy for a while. He could go on the interior or whatever. I don't think there would be any trouble with Mike Zimmer trying to find a way to like use him. But I just don't think that's something that I would want the Vikings to do, because he'd be like really expensive and like probably not worth it. And you'd have to, the draft capital itself would probably be very low though, because the Texans would really be doing this and everybody would know that they're doing this to get rid of a disgruntled player and to get rid of money. So you're not going to hand them a nice, shiny, like valuable draft pick to do that. This is closer to the Brock Osweiler trade than it is to something like the Stephon Diggs trade, where he actually got something back. Forrester asks, his rookie year was exceptional, but what do you think is the biggest area of Justin Jefferson's game that can still improve? Other youngins like Gladney, Dantzler, Cleveland. So Gladney can improve quite a lot. His man-to-man technique, well, I think he's thinking a lot right now. His man-to-man technique is like fine, I guess. But right now he's reading very slowly. So I think it would like just improve on reading offenses, and that's classic rookie stuff. Dantzler, I would probably say the same thing. He messed up the calls a lot earlier on in his career. So I think just making sure that you never miss the call, right? Never screw up what the actual call is. Ezra Cleveland is oversetting. That would be the thing that I think he needs to improve the most on. And I think kicking him out to tackle would kind of resolve that problem, because the sets that he's doing at guard would be good sets of, if you were a tackle. So the actual like muscle memory, and you can tell that they're like tackle sets at the guard position, which are problematic because they make too much space. So fix that. For Justin Jefferson, yeah, he was phenomenal. There's not, it's, I'm not going to say like his routes are like sloppy or whatever, because they're not, they're fantastic. But he did have some miscommunications, and I think that's because he didn't quite have all the plays down. I think that's why he didn't start right away. I think that's why he was very bad in camp. If you remember, like his, he was getting outplayed by BC Johnson in camp, and pretty much everybody who was there agreed with it, and so did the Vikings, and it took him kind of two games to sort of overtake BC Johnson, because I don't think he knew the playbook yet. He missed a whole bunch of camp with COVID. It like totally makes sense. But yeah, I think getting the calls down and doing fewer miscommunications, I think sometimes he'll miss the landmark by a step and it'll look like a throw is behind him, but really he wasn't where he was supposed to be, that kind of thing. So I think for all of these guys, I guess Cleveland's the only like technique thing that I would say, but all of these guys, it's really just get more comfortable in the mental aspect of the game, which is all kind of rookie stuff. Kurt with two C's says, do other zone offenses go after many quote unquote athletic or small OL? And if not, does the Vikings OL operate substantially better at something to warrant continuing that approach? Maybe it's coaching, but the Packers and Rams OL seem to be more well-rounded, where the Vikings are one-dimensional. Yeah, I think you're onto something here, right? My theory for why the Vikings are so bad at scouting offensive line is because their approach to all rookies is about measured athleticism. And that means combine drills, pro day stuff, some other things that they can get like from the colleges. They're not just like looking at three cone times on NFL.com and making decisions based off that. But they have an analytic model that's based a lot on like measurable athleticism. They want guys who are crazy good athletes all the time, because those guys tend to have more upside. And I think on the whole, that's a good strategy, right? There is correlation between how athletic you are and how good you are at football. That shouldn't blow the pants off of anybody. But on the offensive line, it creates this problem that doesn't really exist when you're talking about a wide receiver or an edge rusher, where an offensive lineman that is high upside doesn't really matter. Having the superstar of superstars at offensive line isn't that much different than having one that is just like solid and okay. Either way, that guy's going to get beat for either three pressures or five pressures. Having a disastrous offensive line is the way to make offensive line matter, and not in a good way. And that's what the Vikings have been doing. So I think that their approach is leading to a lot of busts. I don't think that they are looking at Dakota Dozier and Pat Elflein and Drew Samia and saying, yes, that is exactly what we want. I don't think that was the intention. But their approach to drafting in general will generate good defensive line picks. Guys like Anthony Barr will be, you know, that's like the first Mike Zimmer pick, right? And guys like Danielle Hunter, and I think Justin Jefferson checks a lot of boxes in that whole thing. And they do have athletic thresholds that I think are rooted in like pretty good science. But I think they're chasing for the home run when they just need to like hit a single. Speaking of home runs, I wonder if you got your Super Bowl bet in before the playoffs started. You could have even gotten in on the Chiefs at like plus 140 or something on betonline.ag, which is the only place that has you covered for your gambling needs and the one place that we trust. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Right now on betonline.ag, both the Packers and Chiefs are plus 200 to win the Super Bowl. The Bills are plus 325 to win the Super Bowl, and the Buccaneers are plus 375 to win the Super Bowl. So if you pick the Super Bowl champion correctly, you get a bid on it, a bet in on it right now. No matter who it is and what their odds are, you're at least tripling your money. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick-hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by BetOnline.ag wherever you get your podcast. Now let's continue with Twitter Tuesday and all your mailbag questions. Thank you all so much for sending in your questions, by the way. Aaron Egerichs, says, where should the Vikings look to find a kick returner, punt returner? Need to improve in the return game and don't believe either are currently on the roster after Osborne failed. Do we spend draft capital, factor in return ability, and looking for a wide receiver three? So I think I agree with you. I think that they do, like, returner is absolutely a need here. Mike Hughes was supposed to be that guy. He can't stay healthy. KJ Osborne was supposed to be a returner. He's pretty butt. The other guys you have are like Chad Beebe, who has a like ball security issue, and Amir Abdullah, who has like a ball security issue, and both of those guys are pending free agents anyways. So yeah, you need a kick returner for sure. And I think it's justifiable to spend draft capital on a kick returner. I think that that's a, like, you get enough of an edge if you have a good return game. If you remember the Marcus Sherrills days when the Vikings just would always have like 10 yards better field position and it was very consistent, that's a pretty big advantage starting a drive from the 20 versus the 30. If you can do it consistently, it like adds up over time. Like in a particular situation, field position is kind of a small deal, which is a lot of the reason behind like some of the punt or go for it on first fourth down discourse. But over time, if you can kind of average better, you know, 15 yards better because you just have a good return game, that matters. And I think spending a sixth round pick on that is totally justifiable. Now, if you can get a guy that can do that and also be your wide receiver three, yeah, that's totally a home run. So go for that too. But even if you can, I still think it's justifiable to try again on a KJ Osborne. Just keep swinging at that guy until you can find somebody who actually has, you know, the ball security you need and can return reasonably. But a lot of the return game is also on the people blocking in front of that returner. You know, sometimes that returner is not going to make three guys miss if you let three guys get a shot at him. And that has to do with, you know, we'll see how the new special teams coordinator does with that. And that also has to do with some of the deep roster decisions you make. You know, who's your sixth linebacker? That guy's going to have a huge role in some of these things. Mitchell Ryan says, with the improvement of Wonnum over the course of the season and the hopeful return of Danielle Hunter, would it make more sense to draft one of the top defensive tackle prospects this year or a higher value position such as DE? So here's the thing. I think the distinction between DE and DT is one we probably should do away with. They need a guy on the defensive line. Whether that guy is an edge, now if that is going to create a redundancy and you have see a scouting report that's like, no, this guy is a hand in the dirt, five tech only, then yeah, that guy probably isn't as good of a fit as somebody who's a little bit more versatile, but they could probably use a guy at three technique, they could use a guy at edge rusher, and ultimately, I think the idea of improving your pass rush and improving your run defense with a guy who is good at both on the defensive line, whether they line up at three technique or five technique is, I think, not very important to me in the grand scheme of things, even though there's been a lot of, I know Eric Eager's done a lot of good work with like wins above replacement and stuff between edge rusher and defensive tackle and stuff like that. But a lot of that was rooted in the idea that defensive tackle is more focused on run defense, which isn't as important as pass rush and all that stuff. But here's the thing, whether the guy lines up on the left side of the tackle or the right side of the tackle, I don't think it makes a huge difference. Get me a guy who can play and the team can figure out where to put him. So I guess my answer to that is more of like a best player available thing. Speaking of that sort of thing, Dylan asks, if you had to pick a player between a player at 14 between Jalen Waddle, an O-line or a D-line, who would you pick and why? And he says, personally, I'd go with Waddle because he simply can't pass up his playmaking ability on both offense and special teams. Kirk would also have a run to daylight, quick outlet under pressure. I think you make a pretty good argument there with Waddle. If I understand, Jalen Waddle is like a top 10 player. He might be like one of the top three pass catching weapons in the draft. So if he falls to 14, yeah, I think the value there would probably supersede any like positional importance edges that you would be angling at. So yeah, I think I agree with your argument. Kyle Belland says, has there been any rumblings about the potential OC options? Will Jamal Stevenson be promoted to assistant GM? I have not seen any rumblings about OC. Again, I think the teams are kind of waiting for all of the head coaching vacancies to be filled. And more importantly, offensive coordinator candidates are waiting for those head coaching vacancies to be filled, because now like they might get a job in Atlanta's staff with Arthur Smith that might have also been the job that is available here in Minnesota. Now they can choose between those two. So all the candidates are going to be waiting for that. This kind of thing usually doesn't really, really hype up until every like major coaching candidate is eliminated. And because, you know, the Chiefs and the Bills are still in it, we probably don't get a ton of movement on this whole thing until after the Super Bowl. For the second part with Jamal Stevenson, I have no idea. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't like formally change anybody's titles, but somebody like Jamal Stevenson, somebody, you know, people will kind of piecemeal pick up what George Payton used to do. And I don't know the exactness of what that was, but they might just sort of divide out his duties among a bunch of people rather than trying to like promote and change everybody's role. But yeah, I don't know if any like titles will change, but functionally, it's still going to be the same group of people minus George Payton. Maybe they bring in another person to the brain trust. But I also don't think the like formal title makes a huge difference. It's like who is doing what like physically, and that we just don't really know unless you wanted to go walk into TCO Performance Center and start asking some weird questions. But if you wanted to go down there and start asking questions, you would need a car. And that means you have to take care of your car, especially in these late winter months. Don't get complacent. Make sure you keep your car in good shape. For example, especially if you are working from home still, make sure you run that battery every once in a while. Otherwise, that battery dies, and you definitely don't want your battery to sit out in the cold unattended. But if you do need a new battery, you can go to rockauto.com, where they will have all of the car parts your car could ever need. And depending on what your car is, you enter the make, the model, and the year, and they will sort out for you the types of battery that are compatible, or the types of, you know, oil or transmission fluid or whatever you're trying to go get. So they will do a lot of that research and work for you, and you can make sure that you're getting something that is important to your car. And you can probably save a buck too compared to brick and mortar auto parts stores. So head on over to rockauto.com, and in the how you heard about us section, let them know that Locked On sent you, because if you don't, I'm going to have to start extorting politicians with humiliating deepfakes. Rock Auto, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. For the Vikings, the NFL season is over, but the work is just beginning. Join Trevor Sikkema and Benjamin Solak of the Locked On NFL Draft podcast every Tuesday as they start their Team Takeover Tuesday offseason series. And get yourself familiarized with the draft so that you are ready for draft weekend. Each week, they will pick a new team. Eventually, they'll get to the Vikings. Take a deep dive into potential front office and head coach signings, roster review, free agent strategies, and go through a team-centric mock draft. That's every Tuesday over at Locked On NFL Draft. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. So let's continue with the mailbag. Only got a few left here. Purple Pain says, what to do with Rashad Hill? Is there truly a case to be made that Reef is miles better than Hill for what? Five times the cap number. So when it comes to cap, you probably shouldn't think, do they need to be, you know, five times better with five times the money? Because here is the reality of it. Rashad Hill is not a starting quality tackle. If Rashad Hill were brought back to be the starting tackle, that would be a disaster. Now, if you wanted to get rid of Riley Reiff and start a rookie, like go pick a tackle at 14 or whatever, start Ezra Cleveland or something like that, sure. But Rashad Hill is a backup tackle. Now, backup tackles aren't prohibitively expensive. If they have an extra $2 million that they want to throw at Rashad Hill to bring him back and be depth, I love Rashad Hill as depth. He's not a starter. Yes, Reiff is better than Rashad Hill to such a degree that it's worth the money. I would say yes to that pretty emphatically. Rashad Hill has a lot of the same oversetting problems that like Ezra Cleveland has, but they're a lot more extreme because they're happening at tackle. And he has a lot of length and the team really likes that. But ultimately, I think he went undrafted for a reason. He just doesn't have polished technique and he doesn't have a lot of the consistency. There's a lot of whiffs when Rashad Hill gets on the field for an extended period of time. Jake Wybie, if I ever mispronounce anybody's name, please yell at me online. But Jake says, what happened to James Lynch this season? Seemed like he always had good plays early on and then didn't see him on the field much in the second half of the season. He had a couple of disruptions and those were good plays. He did not generate good plays at a high enough clip to really earn a lot of playing time and eventually just lost out a lot of his playing time to like more Armin Watts snaps. James Lynch was kind of a whiff for me on draft night. I was really excited about that pick and it did not bear out at all. So far, I mean, it's just a rookie, right? Sometimes these things kind of turn around on a dime. But players who have a rookie season like James Lynch turn out like Jaleel Johnson more often than they turn out like Tom Johnson as like some kind of late bloomer. But I think he had a lot of games where he just was flat out not very good. So I think the answer is very Occam's razor here. He didn't play a lot of snaps because he didn't earn a lot of snaps. Steezo asks, on the latest Jason Over the Cap OTC podcast, he's hinted that the league may end up at close to a flat cap, meaning the salary cap doesn't change year to year and it would be the same 198. And assuming it is the same 198 million again, what strategy would you recommend for the Vikings offseason? That would be pretty good news for the Vikings because it would mean that they actually are not over the cap for 2021 like a lot of teams are. That would actually mean they do have cap space to work with. So I think then the strategy, I think it would change a little bit, but not too much. You'd still probably want to restructure contracts to open up a little bit of extra space, but then you would have to kind of look around and say, okay, what can we do in free agency? What can we do with this? Or maybe just use it on a couple of extensions. If you have players like Brian O'Neill that you want to make sure you get extended, or somebody, if you do want to keep like an Anthony Harris or an Eric Wilson, somebody that'll be a little bit more expensive, I think that kind of would open things up. Like that would give you the luxury of keeping Rashad Hill in the building, for example. And I think that would be a good idea if you can find a way to afford it. And at a flat cap, it wouldn't be very difficult to find that way to afford it. But also, 2022 is not going to be very easy either. So letting that cap roll over would be pretty defensible as well. Relim Nodnarb says, Luke, what is your food dish Minnesota Vikings doppelganger? Usually good, occasionally great, but never the top choice. I'm going with lasagna. Lasagna is a decent shot, although once My girlfriend and I made a homemade lasagna with homemade noodles, and we also replaced tomato sauce with vodka sauce, and it was phenomenal. So lasagna can be pretty elite. You just got to, you know, take the right care of it. For me, the always a bridesmaid, never a bride of foods, I'm going to go with French fries. French fries are never the star of a meal, right? They are always an also-ran. People like French fries more often than not, right? French fries are very popular. Everybody loves a good pile of fries with their burger, but that meal's about the burger, and it's never going to win the Super Bowl of foods. There's a lot of foods that everybody would choose over fries, especially if you've got like a big spread. If it's like a Super Bowl party, you've got a big spread. People are going for the wings. People are going to go for little desserts. People are going to go for sliders. They're going to go for a lot of stuff before they go for fries. But fries are going to be welcome on a lot of plates, and it is probably an above average food, like pretty sustainably. We the North asks, who realistically do you think the Vikings could or should pick up in free agency that would put them in win now mode? So I think first, if you are unfamiliar, I don't believe that win now mode is a thing that exists, nor does rebuilding mode really exist, but for like two teams in the league. Everybody is just trying to assemble the best team that they can and win as many games as they can. There isn't, I think a lot of times we think of this as Madden, where you're like, okay, am I trying to win this year or not? And it's not. The teams are just kind of always trying to win, unless it is something super crazy like the Jets or Jags this year. But that's a pretty far cry. So I don't really believe in that. However, if you just want some free agency recommendations, I am going to echo the one that I'll link the article, but PFF wrote an article, like a free agent that they like for each team, and they said Shelby Harris. Now, I liked Shelby Harris last year in free agency. He only went and signed a one-year deal, and he's a pretty solid player. He's a defensive lineman. He was kind of always a little underrated. He played for the Broncos for a long time, and he was like stuck behind Bradley Chubb and Von Miller, and he was, I think, a good player, and he was always good in like a rotational role, but he was just kind of buried behind people. It's kind of like Stephen Weatherly for a long time, and I thought the Vikings could go afford that. They didn't end up taking it, but they're going to get another chance because he was only on a one-year deal, and I think that he would be a really good addition to the Vikings starting lineup, and I think he could start, although even if he didn't end up starting, just being part of the rotation, taking over, you know, the Jaleel Johnson role, or even kicking out to edge and taking over the Afadi Odenigbo role or something like that, I think could be a really, really, really nice fit. And because I have a little bit of extra time, let's go to another one from Rillim Nodnarb, who says, Luke, does your soul die a little every time you see Winfield Jr. make a play? Love Gladney, but it hurts, not going to lie. No, because I'm not really a Gophers fan. I didn't go to the University of Minnesota, so I kind of, when I went to my own college, I sort of renounced all my other like college fandoms and stuff. My parents are all like Gophers fans and stuff, so I don't know, maybe it's different for them. But to me, he was just like another guy that was like pretty good in the draft. And I don't know, if you look at like, should the Vikings have taken Antoine Winfield over Jeff Gladney, I think that's like a difficult case to make, because you also would have to say it would be a world where they didn't have Anthony Harris. They didn't have any corners at the time. They still didn't have any corners all year. So having one fewer corner would like be even worse to like the problem that sunk a lot of their season. So I think it'd be really difficult to do that. Although I guess you could probably give him like a nickel role and you would kick somebody else outside. You probably have Mike Hughes play outside. That would have been the plan. And then Hughes would get hurt, but you're not going to plan around that. So I could like see a world where that would have been a good fit. I know the Vikings were high on Antoine Winfield, and I think it would have been fine to take Winfield instead of Gladney. Like that, I wouldn't have said no to that decision, but I'm certainly, I wouldn't hold the Vikings like accountable as some kind of mistake. I know he's got a lot of ties to Minnesota, but I think most of the yearning for Antoine Winfield Jr. is because his dad was a Viking and because he played for the Minnesota Gophers. I think like that's like the reason, and not necessarily something like you want somebody the Vikings passed on in the late rounds that you should be upset about. It's Michael Onwenu. He went in the fifth round and he's like on the verge of all pro teams for the Patriots, and he's a guard. Like that's the one you should be mad about if you want to be mad about like a player that they whiffed on. But honestly, in the draft, and this is going to be something that I think I'm going to parrot a lot over the course of draft, so get ready to hear this a lot. Evaluate a draft based on who a team picked and not based on who they didn't pick. I think that has to be the case, because here's the thing. There are often going to be a lot of good players in the later rounds of the draft. So you think about day three, players who come out of that draft, there's going to be five or six players that come out of that draft that are starters instantly, right? Guys like Michael Onwenu and stuff, guys that kind of just are the surprises. It happens every year because the draft is hard and we're not great at evaluating talent, especially when all we can do is like watch some college film. So because somebody unexpectedly breaks out as like a sixth round pick, right? Like every receiver taken in front of Antonio Brown in 2010 was not a bad pick because Antonio Brown was on the board. It was just like a surprise. So I think if we want to evaluate the process, then evaluate that process. And when you do go look into the process of like the selection to take Jeff Gladney over Antoine Winfield, I think other than people who were worried about like the knee surgeries themselves, very few people had Jeff Gladney over Winfield in that draft. And the way the draft bears out and the way we view the draft is always going to be drastically different. So if you want to evaluate the merits of a front office, you have to evaluate the decisions they made with the information they had. They can't go forward in time and see how all these guys are going to bear out. And even the best scouting departments are probably going to be about 50-50 optimistically. That's just the nature of the draft. So no, long answer, really short, no. Every time Antoine Winfield Jr. makes a play, my heart does not sink because I don't have as many like emotional ties as a lot of Vikings / Gophers fans do, but also because I don't really think it's fruitful to like have that sort of regret about the draft. If you think the Vikings made a mistake by drafting Jeff Gladney because he's not good enough, sure, we can have that discussion. That's a much different conversation. But let me give you the easiest example, which is Laquon Treadwell, right? Laquon Treadwell was a bad pick because Laquon Treadwell was bad. The existence of Michael Thomas, who the Vikings took Treadwell over Thomas, that's a big miss, right? But because Laquon Treadwell was pretty bad, you could point to a lot of players in that draft that were better than Laquon Treadwell that the Vikings should have taken. And it doesn't really change. It doesn't make Laquon Treadwell any worse than he already is, and you don't really need to bring other players into the conversation to criticize Laquon Treadwell as a pick. Let me put it another way. Let's say the Vikings took William Jackson, who went the pick after Laquon Treadwell, who's been a pretty good cornerback for the Bengals, and then because they had just taken a cornerback in the second round instead of Mackenzie Alexander, they take Tyler Boyd. That is probably a better configuration, right? We can all get behind that, and we probably aren't looking at that and saying, oh, woe is us, they could have had Michael Thomas and they took William Jackson instead. We're not really making that comparison at all, most likely, because you got a pick that you're a little bit happier with. So for me, the evaluation of the pick always comes on who they took and if that guy turned out and was good, rather than who they took and also who was taken two rounds later that also could have been good or whatever. But that's enough waxing poetic about all that stuff. We'll have that conversation plenty as the draft draws nearer. Tomorrow on the show, I have no idea what we're going to do. So stick around for, I guess, a surprise. I'll try to make it some kind of like film thing. So I don't know. Look forward to that, but we'll come up with something. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. The show is on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. I'll see y'all tomorrow. And as always, Skol.